There is more going on than you know. There are unseen universal forces at work. The law of attraction is just one universal law that plays a part in shaping your reality. But there's so much more to know. If you knew how to engage all the universal forces, you could deliberately create the life of your dreams. Joshua, a group of non-physical teachers, explains the laws of the universe and how the mechanisms of physical reality actually work. They are channeled by Gary Temple Bodley, and each week, Gary and a group of students discuss how they are affecting and enhancing their lives every single day. This is the expansion of the law of attraction. This is the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. We're thrilled you're here.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 44 of the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. I'm your host, Gary Temple Bodley. Today, it's August 20th, 2016. We all know that as soon as we birth a desire, the universe goes to work to bring us what we want in the most elegant way possible. One of the ways we engage universal energies is through inspired action. When we are inspired to do something, and we do it despite our fears, we leverage unseen powers and create miracles. But how do you know if the action is inspired, and how does the system really work? That's what we're going to talk about today. On the roundtable today, we have Steve Fenizza. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Gary.
And Michael Kudson. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary.
And Kyla Hinton. Hi, Kyla.
Hi, Gary.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Good to be with you.
Yeah.
Because of Steve, we're doing this at this ungodly hour, 9 in the morning on a Saturday.
Oh, it's 6 in the morning for him.
6.
Well, he's the one who chose it, so I don't feel bad for him at all.
I chose this for you.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm sure
this is the universe doing this for you, so you have so the rest of your day is free, Gary.
You mean it's not happening to me, it's happening for me?
Exactly.
Feels like it's happening to me. Normally, Friday nights, I play poker, like one of the most fun tournaments. It's sort of a crazy tournament every Friday night, and I usually do very well almost every week, which means we're lasting until 1 or so in the morning. And so Saturdays, it's really hard to get up because, you know, you're out late. And last night, for some weird reason, I got knocked out around 10 o'clock and came home at 10 and had, you know, a nice rest, sleep, and got up early. But I have to believe that this was all because of Steve.
It was my intention last night to knock you out.
That's right.
Sorry about that.
Actually, it was my intention to somehow get a good night's sleep, and that's... the universe answered me.
That's what I was going to say.
In the least elegant way possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Before we get started, let's do the quote of the week.
Okay. The universe knows what you want and how to bring it into alignment with your desires. You do not have the same ability the universe has, so relax and let things work for you, Joshua.
So that is sort of like when Abraham says, you know, don't fill in your own grid. Don't take action just to make things happen, because you can't really know how it's going to happen. The universe knows exactly how it's going to happen, but you don't know what the universe knows. You have a limited perspective. You can only see this far, you know, a few feet in front of you. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is how inspired action works, and, you know, when you know it's inspiration, and, you know, what happens with that, how does that work to engage universal forces, and, you know, are you in the right frame of mind to even do it? And then you're going to have fears, and you're going to be able to push through those fears. So lately, what's been happening for me is I realize this idea of inspired action is a thing. And so now I am paying attention to my thoughts. And when I receive a thought to do something, I first take a look at how am I feeling? Am I in a positive emotional state of being? Am I happy? Am I feeling good? Am I energetic? And am I, you know, sort of focused in the right way? Or am I pissed off or upset or bored or in a bad mood or something? That's the big key. So if you are in a bad mood and you receive a thought to do something, it's generally to do something to get you out of that mood, which, you know, could be drinking a glass of wine. It could be, you know, listening to music. It could be anything, or it could be punching a wall.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking the punching the wall this week.
Did you have some low emotional states of being this week, Michael?
Oh, man. Yes, I did.
So that's a good thing. So, if, you know, if someone attacks you or insults you or something, your first reflex is to want to say something back and attack them in return, or, you know, do something. But that's absolutely not inspired action. It's not leading you where you want to go, and it's not coming from a place of love, for instance. So this week,
how about hanging up on somebody?
Hanging up on somebody is a – well, okay, so Joshua had just gotten this in this question I just did this morning for Kyla and says, okay, there's two things. There's inspired action and there's urges. Hmm. And Joshua actually talked about this in the Joshua Diet book. So there's urges. Urges come from a low emotional state of being. It feels like it's inspired action, but it's an urge. And the urge is designed or works like a reflex to get you off of this – low emotional state of being. So you get mad and you urge is to punch a wall. But that punching of the wall may wake you up and it may, you know, change your state, but it certainly doesn't move you toward where you want to go. Just like it, a reflex is, you know, you touch a hot stove and the reflex automatically, without you thinking, pulls your hand away, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that pulling the hand away, that's certainly a good thing. But depending on who's standing behind you, you could elbow somebody in the gut. Right. So it's not doing anything good for you. But when you're in a feeling good, in a positive emotional state of being, being happy, and then you get this thought or an idea, and then you pursue that, that will always lead toward you want to where you want to go. It'll always be beneficial in some way. And it engages universal forces because what's happening is the universe is working out this timing, and when it's time to act, that's when you get the thought. And this happened to me this week. I was probably in the morning after meditating. I was doing a Joshua question for somebody, and I got done, and I just had this idea to call my friend Bruce. Bruce just moved to Charlotte, and I drove up with him, spent that whole weekend with him, had a great time. So we haven't been apart for very long, maybe a week or so. So I thought it was a little bit weird to call him. And so – but it was an idea to call him, and I knew that was inspired, you know, an idea that was inspired. But whenever you have inspired ideas, you also have a little fear. So my fear was, you know, is he going to be available? Is this conversation going to last forever? You know, do I have time for this? What happens if I say I'm calling you because I was inspired to call you? And he goes, well, you know, what are you going to say? But what happened was I just called him. I just pushed through those little tiny fears, called him anyway. And he said, thank God you called. I really need to talk to you. And we went on to this, I think, 45-minute conversation that went super deep into what he is trying to do with his business that he hadn't even thought of before. And it was like this total Joshua ideas, that, and he, like, just got it in an instant. It was really interesting. Yeah. So, you know, I think that if you're moving along in a positive emotional state of being and you just go with these – inspiration, even though you might think, oh, it's not the right time, or I could do it tomorrow, or whatever. I think there's something really in the timing of everything.
Yeah, I've had a few things lately. When I was inspired to do something, and I and the fears came up, and I was like, is this a good idea? Is this something I want to do? And then I checked in, just like you were talking about, with my emotional state, and I was in a great mood, and so I just pushed through, and I've been doing those things, and it's working out pretty well for me so far. So
yeah, and it's funny because you just have to have this faith or confidence that if you're feeling good, which is the most important thing to know, and you have the thought to do it, you can just be absolutely have faith that pursuing it will lead to something that is in your best. Now, it could lead right into a manifestation event.
Yeah.
That, too, is for you as well.
Yeah. That's something earlier on that's just now sinking in, earlier on in the one-on-one, when Joshua answered one of my questions and said, I think it was something with my ex. I was wanting to figure out how to be more accepting of him, be able to deal with him without feeling negative emotion. And they said, essentially, negative emotion is nothing to fear. Like, these manifestation events are nothing to fear because you grow through each of them. So it helped me stop being afraid, like, dreading the next one coming.
Yeah. That was another thing that we talked to Kate about, too, is that what you really fear is the emotion that you're going to face, right? You don't want to feel bad. You don't want to be sad or angry or anything. But when you realize that the emotion is only the guidance system at work, and that you want this guidance to happen, and if you learn how to deal with the emotion and make it, you know, not as intense, and when you're going through it, because you know that it's, you know, letting you know that you're perspective is not focused on what you want, it's focused on something else, and then you can go back into the right focus. So it's all a matter of being able to understand what the emotions are. But the only thing you really ever fear in anything is the emotion, you know?
Yeah.
If you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was just reading about that in the Joshua Diet, too.
Yeah, that's
just
where it came from, right?
Yeah, negative emotion is nothing but an indicator.
Yeah, so if you go and ask your boss for a raise... Which the fear is how you will feel if he says no. Not that if he's going to say yes or no. It's how you feel if he says no. So you'll – that's how people limit themselves and stay in comfort zones, asking someone on a date, how will you feel if that person says no? You know.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I got I saw myself doing it too. This client who periodically I've had some difficulties with – wanted to have a meeting. And every time we have a meeting, this guy goes off on all kinds of kooky things that, that, you know, we haven't done this. We haven't done that. You're not the street fighter that the other lawyer is. You're not, they fight dirty. You should be fighting dirty, blah, 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 blah. And you should be looking to get the other guy's license, and you should be looking for criminal prosecution. And I mean, and it's all a lot of craziness. And I got myself so worked up about it that I didn't respond, you know, to his calls to set up this meeting. We had a deposition this week. He then grabs me outside after the deposition. The first question he asks me, or the first thing he says to me, is, "You should have said to me, you should have asked him about blah blah." Oh, the question was that he wanted me to ask was, "You should have asked the witness why, you know, whether he liked me or not." And my first response was, "Who gives a shit? who gives a poopy about it?" And I said it, and I was like really pissed. And he said, "Well, I want to have a meeting with you." And I said, "Well, we'll have a meeting if you're prepared to be reasonable." Right out of this deposition, and he stormed off, and he was really angry. And then I thought I had to go back in to meet with the other lawyer for a few minutes about some logistical things. And I came back out and I said, "Where is he?" And I found out he left. And, you know, that's not a good way for a client meeting to end.
Right.
It's like, oh, geez, you know, here we go.
I kind of want to see you mad like that, Michael. I can't
even imagine it.
Oh, my God.
You look so nice.
Yeah.
I am so nice. And, and I'm very reasonable. The problem is that, you know, I do... You know, I face resistance when I feel that people aren't being reasonable.
Right.
And so, you know, I sent a very long email to him. You know, I apologized for getting annoyed with him. I said, I just said, "Look, you caught me at a really bad time when I'm right out of a deposition. My adrenaline is up to my eyeballs," which is true. You know, even if I have a smile on my face, my adrenaline is, I'm in complete fight mode.
Right.
So, if I even perceive an attack, I'm going to go crazy. So I did, and I sent a very long email and explaining what his case really is is based on and what chance and what we can do to fight his case and why all these other things really just don't make sense and why they don't work for him. And then I called him the next morning and he said, you know, and then he, in fact, not only accepted my apology, but apologized to me. And I wasn't worried and I didn't fear it, which was interesting. It helped that I approached it from that basis. And I approached it from a really from a basis of trying to reconcile the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, without worrying about how it would play out.
Right, right. So you sort of came from a love place rather than a fear place. And it must be hard in your, you know, profession because everyone's encountering fear the whole time they're embattled in something legal. Most of the time, especially if it's family law too. So you have to be you're surrounded by fear all the time. And you have to be this beacon of acceptance, we will say, that you can just accept people for being how they're being in this these times. But being fearful yourself of what they're thinking just makes matters probably even more problematic.
Right. And well, and in particular, this week I was really, really tired. I was working a lot of long days, except for the nights when my son had his show. So, and even those days were stressful because I had to rush and get everything done so I could get the heck out. So it was just a very, it was a tough, stressful week. And he caught me and a couple of other people caught me at very, you know, where I was frayed in every respect. So, I was not being terribly inspired. I was acting out of both fear and, frankly, exhaustion.
Yeah. Mm. And that just goes to show how it is more important than anything else is to be feeling good and to demand to feel good no matter what that entails. And realizing that the universe only really works for you if you can engage it through acting on inspiration, and unless you're feeling good, you can't really do that. Because, you know, if you're not feeling – let's just say there's a line. And if you're feeling good, you're above the line. If you're feeling bad, you're under the line. And if you're under that line, then the inspiration can't get through. But what gets through is these urges. And the Joshua Diet, you know, they say a lot of the problems is that when you're overweight, it's because of – this consistency of feeling bad most of the time. And for you as a person who's overweight, you're trying to soothe yourself or you're receiving these urges. So I think that's really a lot of it is out of people's control because they get these urges to eat to make themselves feel better. So it's this reflex action coming from a place of not feeling good. But when you can demand to feel good, when that's your top priority and you're above this line, then the ideas that you receive, because you don't create your ideas, you receive them, you tap into this well-being and you are flooded with thoughts and ideas that will keep you feeling good. And those will be, you know, maybe exercise or, you know, eat right or things like that. I mean, that's a total simplification of the whole system, but that's the real basics of it.
So a question I would have for Joshua then, going back to what Michael was saying about sleep. So the priority is to feel good. So obviously getting sleep, adequate amounts of sleep would help that. But once you're at the point where you haven't gotten sleep, how do you demand to feel good at that point? I mean...
Well, you know, one thing is to understand where you are emotionally. So if you haven't gotten sleep, you're tired, and things pop up, you can go, well, this is going to be a challenge because I'm not feeling good, and I can now be aware of these ideas that are coming to me that aren't really empowering, they're not for my benefit. And so I can stop and say, listen, let's maybe meditate.
Right.
Feeling good. Or let's just take a break from all this and go for a walk. Let's get away from this. The real time to notice this is when you're in a fight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of reacting, just
go to the bathroom.
Go to the bathroom.
Yes. You can. I'm not locked in a car.
Yeah. Ooh. Or pull over and go to the bathroom. Or turn up the radio or something. Yeah.
So I was gonna
ask. Yeah, so But look at that, making sleep super important, making exercise super important, but making that a priority instead of like, well, when I get to it, you know.
Right. And this week in particular, not only was I feeling physical exhaustion, but I hadn't had any chance to exercise.
Yeah.
Or at least I hadn't allowed myself the chance to exercise.
And look at you, Michael, in your situation where you're working crazy amounts of hours and you have this idea that that's just what you do in this profession. If I wasn't working this time, I wouldn't be the success. I wouldn't, you know, what would everyone else think of me? It's like you are pretty much in a self-imposed system where work comes first and sleep and exercise and eating right comes last. Just like the email you sent me where it wasn't until 10 o'clock at night until you had some peanuts was the first thing you ate all day.
No, I'm allergic to peanuts.
Okay, what was that? Cashews, almonds?
It was cashews, almonds, and macadamias. Mm-hmm. And that was my first meal of the day, and it was about at 10 o'clock at night. Otherwise, I was subsisting on 2 cups of coffee.
Because you have things that have to get done.
Right.
You have a schedule. But you created all this, you know. This is an interesting thing.
Boy, am I a lousy creator if that's what I created.
You're a perfect creator, Michael.
It's super interesting.
I love you, Kyla. You're sweet.
But look, what you're doing is something you're passionate about. It's super interesting. You get a lot of fun out of it, I'm sure. But you also have all this other bullshit wrapped around it. I did the same thing when I had my company. It was like I created my business with all these employees and all these working moving parts that trapped me into these 10-hour days, you know, most of which were fun, but still I was focused on that and I wasn't focused on feeling good. And if anyone in that whole office focused on feeling good, we're like, no, you have to work. You can't feel good.
I do the same thing with my kids, less now than I used to, but just, focusing so much on what's going on with them and sort of putting myself last and not remembering to like make sure that I'm feeling good too, being so focused on making sure that they're feeling good the same way that you guys probably in your jobs, like making sure that all the parts are moving and like running together.
Right. Although if I come out of a stressful meeting or a long meeting, sometimes I'll start running around my office or start dancing around my office and I'll start singing, he works hard for the money, so hard for it, honey. This whole wild dance while I'm doing, and of course I crack up the staff when I do that. But they know I'm, and they all know, okay, Michael's blowing off some steam right now.
We used to have this, sort of attitude at the office where it was sort of, first of all, we had a time limit. We were in this business where things had to get done on time. But my attitude as boss was making sure that everyone was working as hard as they could and doing everything, not having as much fun as they could. Mm. Now, the funny thing is, when we were doing what we're doing, it took some concentration. And if you were in a high emotional state of being, then those ideas that you needed would flow to you and you could be so much more productive if you were happy and working hard, happy. And you could have done what you needed to do in probably half the time. And there was a lot of problem solving involved. So if something was difficult and you weren't in a high emotional state of being, you're never going to figure it out. And that's why a lot of times we would like put the file aside and come back to it the next day. And the next day it'd be easy, but the one we couldn't do the day before. It was really interesting in that regard. But I never got that. Had I known this stuff now, I'm sure that we would have been even more, it would have certainly been a lot happier and a lot more productive too, and made a lot more money. So it's interesting to see this whole idea of feel good first and then engage universal forces from that feel good place by allowing the ideas and the thoughts to come to you that align with what you're doing. And that's how you can be so much more effective.
I'd love to have you as a boss, Gary, because I would just tell you all the time when you ask me to do something is I'm not inspired to do that right now.
Right. And what can I say? You just take your time and make sure you feel good, Steve.
Okay.
You have a chance.
I'm going to take a nap.
See, even knowing what I know now, I'd have trouble with that. You have a long way to go.
Steve, okay, those documents have to be in court today.
Yeah.
You just delay this postponement.
You watch. It'll work
out. The universe will work it out, yeah.
Okay, let's go to the question. Who wants to read the question?
I'll read the question. All right. Dear Joshua, before getting up this morning, I was thinking about inspired action versus general action and thinking how I have the belief that action, uninspired or not, is how to move forward. I know you have the higher perspective and are saying it's piddly, but because everything I have done, at least in my limited awareness, has come from action, often uninspired, but that I perceived as necessary, I continue to believe that I have to keep motivating myself to keep moving forward, mainly in work. I have a general view that Source takes care of the big things, like keeping the planet together. But I have to do the small things to keep getting what I want, like showing up to work, making phone calls, etc. Everything I know would collapse if I stopped and just sat back and waited for inspiration. Obviously, there's a lot of fear behind that idea. I know it's fine to have that belief. Maybe not as efficient as I could have it, but if it is what makes me comfortable in taking action, then it is fine. But it is driven by fear, and I felt the effects of that yesterday when my arm, neck, and heel were all hurting and my tummy was a mess. All this within 24 hours of my boss being back from vacation. And yet, when he is here, I work more, am more focused, more motivated, etc. I'm not sure how to move through this, except, and this is good enough for me, taking each negative emotion as it comes up and working on it. I have a lot of work to do. Smile. Kate.
Yeah, so the all those physical resistance things manifested when her boss came back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Kate is she works in stocks or something in Paris in an office.
Yeah, she works at a financial institution in France, doesn't she?
Yeah. I think she's like a stockbroker or a financial planner, something like that.
That's
okay.
Right. Okay.
Michael, are you going to read for Joshua?
I certainly will.
Let's see what Joshua has to say.
Okay. Dear Kate, there is inspired action which comes from a place of love. Inspired action is based in love. Inspired action comes from a higher perspective that sees the whole picture, knows what all involved need, and knows how it will all play out. All other action comes from a place of fear. It comes from you trying to make things happen because, from your lower perspective, it seems as if this action must be taken or something bad will happen. Do you see the difference here?
That's an interesting paragraph, too. And this is saying that, you know, sometimes you think that you should be doing something because if you don't do it, something bad will happen. But if you're not inspired to do it, and this is the tricky point, is how do you know when you're inspired or not? Because if there's a deadline coming up and you need to get it done, is that inspiration or is the deadline motivation or how does it work out? I think
the deadline's a belief, right?
It's sort of this – I don't know. It is a belief.
That you have.
You have a belief, that you have to meet the deadline. But if you have the belief that it was flexible – and if you weren't inspired and you didn't take that inspired action, and I've had similar things happen, not in a job necessarily, but where I didn't feel inspired to do something and then the deadline just moved. Like it was pushed back.
Yeah, I've had that
too,
actually. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But you have to soften your belief around that deadline.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Most of the time, we're going to go ahead and just do things because they have to get done. But, sometimes you just don't want to do something and you know that. That's definitely not inspired.
Well, I've been pushing it ever since I found out that deadlines aren't real.
You're pushing your deadlines.
I have been, and it's amazing how most of the time I think it works out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think that I can even recall the time it hasn't worked out when a deadline. Yeah,
me neither.
I'm working on this house now, and most of the times I get a house done in, say, 3 months or 4 months. And this house has taken 2 years. Mm-hmm. I've had a really relaxed approach about it because of Joshua and all this. And I know that the timing is working on its own. And it is absolutely amazing how every little thing is happening in perfect timing, even though it's taking 2 years. Hmm. And in that 2 years, in that extra year. This is a really difficult house, so it would have normally taken a year because it was so hard. But that extra year, the house went up in value $100,000 from where we thought it was going to be. So, mm-hmm.
So that's what
even that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay, let's go to the next paragraph.
Okay. There is no inspired action in general action. It is inspired or it is not. You might think it's not inspired when it is, and you might also think it's inspired when it's not.
Okay, well, there's the tricky sentence there. Even when I was typing this, I'm going, well, this doesn't even tell us anything. You know, you might think it's not inspired when it is inspired, and you might also think it's inspired when it's not. So Kate was talking about on one of the live Joshuas that she started listening to some motivational podcasts. Mm. This got her really motivated. And Josh was always saying, well, motivation is based in fear and inspiration is based in love. But what was interesting about that was that the inspiration came to look at the motivational or listen to the motivational podcast. So the inspiration was to go to the motivation because she needed the motivation for her. That was really interesting. Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Okay.
Keep going.
Yeah.
When you want to do something because it is interesting, exciting, fun, challenging, or you feel that somehow it is right, then that is inspired action. If you get an idea or thought and you feel the urge to do it, then it is inspired. Even if there is fear involved, as long as you are in a high emotional state of being, the action will always be for your highest good. The results may not seem that promising or productive in the moment, but the results, whatever they are for your highest good. Inspired action engages universal forces. Its timing is perfect, and the results are extremely productive.
Great. Okay, that's what I always thought about inspired action.
Okay. Think about how the universe brings you everything you want. You ask, and it is given immediately. You don't match what it is you want in your present state, so you must be changed so that you do match it. You will be guided towards all the circumstances, chance meetings, news articles, conversations, and manifestation events that will help you change into the version of you who is ready for what it is you want. The universe has to line everything up at the perfect time so that you can rendezvous with each and every opportunity. The timing is critical.
Okay. So now we sort of can see this from a higher perspective. You birth a desire, and it is given immediately. That's something that Abraham has always said, right?
Ask and it is given.
Ask and it is given. Okay, so how is it given? Well, you've asked for it, so now you are on a trajectory toward it. And you either go with the flow of that trajectory, or you resist it thinking the little things that are there are bad, or that you have some fear and you don't do anything, right? So you might want a Ferrari and actually, let's say it the other way because you actually got this. You might want a special motorcycle, a Harley, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, but the way you get the Harley you want, it has to have a lot of different things. It has to be the right price, the right color. Your family has to be cool with it. You have to have the ability to financially be responsible and pay for it in the right way. And so a lot of things. So the universe, that motorcycle exists and you have to get to it somehow. So you might get the thought to read something in a magazine, to read this article, or to open a magazine. And you open the magazine and turn to a page that talks about this one motorcycle, or talks about a trip on a motorcycle, or even a place you want to go. And so this gets your thoughts going, gets you in this vibrational alignment with the motorcycle, right? It moves you towards that. Then you come into a manifestation event, and you have some fear that you figure out in that manifestation event, and you realize the fear is false because it's irrational, and you're now even closer in vibrational alignment, and then one thing leads to another. And how did you find this motorcycle, Steve?
I was inspired to look online. I'd been looking for many months, but inspired to look online and found it fairly close. I was looking nationwide, and I found something within 2 hours of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way too cheap. I was like, what's wrong with the bike? Why is it so inexpensive? The color was amazing. The location was near my dad's house, so that kind of worked out. After I got it, I could stop by my dad's house and show it off right away. And it continues to be perfect because the motor failed. You would think that'd be bad, right?
No. Right.
I essentially get a new motor, got a brand new motor under warranty, and I was able to, my thing is make it go fast. So I got to add some go fast parts on it. So now it's like brand new motor, faster than almost, you know, most powerful motor Harley makes with their go fast bits. And I'm like, it continues to be the perfect bike.
Wow. Yep. So you weren't in vibrational alignment with it the day you thought of it, and you know that because it didn't exist in your life. So you had to get there, and then the universe is getting you there. You just have to go with the flow of that.
Yeah.
That is an approach. That's what a radical approach to life is understanding that there's nothing you need to do except be open to all these opportunities and thoughts and ideas and release fear and go with the flow, and you'll get there.
It's almost too easy.
Well, it is, but we have a lot of resistance, don't we?
Well, it's not. Look at all the books on goal setting. I mean, this is kind of the opposite of that.
Yep.
Not a lot of work here.
Well, goal setting is filling in your own grid instead of letting the universe do it. Intention is going with the flow of things, setting an intention for how you want things to work out, because it's much more open-ended.
Yeah, but try talking to your friends when they're asking, like, well, what are your kids doing right now? Are they going to college? And you say, well, no, they're just kind of sitting there waiting for inspired action to do.
Yeah, they're going with the flow.
Yeah, going with the flow. They're looking at you like you're bizarre.
Don't well, you we're your friends. Children? We don't say that to you.
Yeah.
You need more friends like us.
Oh, I do, definitely.
Right.
Yep, it's true. My friends are moved to Charlotte to put their 4-year-old or 6-year-old in a good school. And I'm like, doesn't need school.
Oh, that would not fly in my house.
Because... yeah, well, I don't want you going there. I'll go there. That's my funnest subject, even though I don't have kids. Yeah. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Okay. So you receive a thought to take some action.
Oh,
you
do we? Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yep.
I was in the wrong paragraph. Go ahead.
Okay. You either act on the thought or you resist the thought. The thoughts are inspiration to go here, look there, listen to that conversation, talk to that person, make a phone call, take that taxi, take this route, be early for this meeting, be late for that appointment, and so on and so forth. Everything is timed and coordinated so that you meet the right people at the right time who have the right information. Your mother is inspired to call you during work hours, even though she knows you don't like this. And still she calls. Why is that, do you suppose? To deliver information you need at that time in your life. Yet, you resist the information, calling her timing inappropriate.
So that's how you resist what the universe is trying to give you. You get this thing that falls on your lap, and then you call that thing wrong, and you're fighting against that thing instead of embracing it with a sense of curiosity. Well, why is this happening? You know, this is for me. It's happening for me. Let's see if we can figure out how this is for me.
So when Michael got approached after he came out of this deposition with this angry man who said, Michael, you should have done this, 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 and this. You should have said, you know, you're right.
Right.
I'm sorry. Let's explore this and what I should have done.
Yep.
I'm never going to tell him that he was right when I feel he's wrong.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing. There is no wrong. Yeah,
but
there is no wrong. He couldn't have come to you unless it was for something. And for you thinking he's wrong, now this is super high-level stuff, and we know no one's going to get this. But This is a manifestation event that you have the ability to see that there is a possibility that he's right here. And of course, we're not saying that he's right, but from your perspective, if you can see how he's being right for who he is, where he is, the timing of all this, your emotional state, his emotional state, and how this thing together where you feel negative emotion, once you feel negative emotion, you know you're in a manifestation event or positive emotion too. So you can now, instead of reacting by fighting back, so resisting, fighting back, you allow it to play out, and you instead of making him wrong, you try and see, well, where could he be right? If I was to look at this from some other perspective, where could he be right? And then that's how you get insight.
Because from his perspective, he was right, right?
From his perspective, he was 100% right. He couldn't even fathom how you could think he was wrong.
So the challenge makes no sense. The challenge is to find his perspective.
Right.
Or at least, you know, acknowledge his perspective.
And the only reason you're doing that is to get information for you, insight for you, not to make him right. You don't care about him being right. You care about the information that's contained in that manifestation event that can serve you to bring you to another level.
I've been using this, and Joshua is right. It is definitely the fastest way to diffuse conflict. I guess the thing that I'm running into now is all the people immediately in my life are aware of it. So now when I say it, I get an eye roll, you know, when I tell them they're right.
when you go, I'm
but
sorry.
But it does kind of diffuse conflict still, because then they like laugh at me or I laugh. So, yeah.
Or you can say it like I do. You can say it totally sarcastically.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize. You're right.
You're right.
You're right.
I don't think that quite is the message that Joshua is trying to send.
Yeah, you know, it does, especially when people get used to it, used to you saying it, then they know that they can't even fight with you. There's nothing,
right?
And so they do get that role. But imagine doing it in places where, you know, people don't expect it. You know,
right.
It's so powerful.
My ex hasn't caught on yet. Every single time I say it, and it's just, it's crazy stuff. Like when he's telling me that I'm in violation of the law, and like,
right.
You know, and I just say, "You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I will take care of it." And then even if I don't like do exactly what he wanted me to do, it still works out, right?
All you're trying to do is ease the conflict. So in case we haven't talked about this before, this is Joshua's conflict resolution thing, where no matter what anyone says to you, you don't take it personally. You say, "You're right. I apologize." Mm-hmm. And that's all you do. Right.
But what if you're not prepared to do what it is that they're telling you?
You don't have to do anything. You just say you're right. Not do anything. Yeah. You're right. I apologize. And then don't do anything. Just do the same thing you're doing before. But at least you end that conflict right there. You put him from this fight mode into this totally different change of vibration.
I had the same question, Michael. This was earlier on in my one-on-one when I asked several questions about this, just stuff to do with my ex, you know. And I said, how can I tell him he's right when he's so clearly not right, you know? And then if I tell him he's right, don't I have to then go along with what he's saying that I need to do? And they said no. And so I took a little leap of faith, and I've done that a few times. And it just hasn't been an issue. Like, there have been times when I've gone ahead and gone along with it just because it didn't cost me anything. But there were other times when he wanted me to do something that I didn't feel was right for me. I still did the whole "you're right, I'm sorry," and then just kept doing things my way. And it hasn't been an issue at all. He hasn't brought it back up. So I don't know.
Yeah. It is funny too. So one of the things that, can I talk about what your ex-husband wanted you to do in the divorce settlement?
I don't know what you're talking about, but sure. Which thing? Yeah.
I got this letter. When I got the letter, I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, right,
so one of the
right.
things was that he didn't want her to drink alcohol around the kids. And normally in a divorce settlement, you would say don't drink to excess. But he didn't want her to drink anything because he doesn't drink. And so I'm like, how dare he? That's ridiculous. But Josh was like, okay, So, and I'm just paraphrasing this because I can't remember exactly. It was really powerful right. how they wrote it, but it was yeah. like, if the message came from God instead of the person, would you then think differently about what was being said? So if God told you not to drink in front of your children, you'd be like, yes, God, I won't do it. right? But right. if you're his husband, you think, he's, how dare he? He's just a person. But yeah. if this is for you, maybe this is for you, you know.
I loved that. It caused a total shift in my perspective because oh. I like my attitude towards it all was he's just trying to control me. I'm not right. trying to get shit faced in front of my kids, but I want to over the next 16 years be able to have a beer with dinner if I choose yeah. to, even exactly. if they happen to be at the table. But right. when they said that, you know, and just again throwing out like possible alternative perspectives where they're like, maybe it's part of your kid's path. Maybe it wouldn't serve them to see their mother consuming alcohol in front of them, which right. wasn't something that I had considered. I don't know why that would be part of their path, but just the fact that that is a possibility, that is one way that this could be working out for me. It helped it swallow it a little bit easier. So yeah. I said, you're right. I'm sorry. Let's go with that. Then,
and that is, you know, and the funny thing about him, I think, is that he thinks he's so right that you saying you're right, I'm sorry, is the only thing he thinks you could possibly say.
Right.
That's why he's not catching on to it.
Yeah. And like, so that is also an example of allowing. Had I resisted that, totally. that alcohol thing, that's the last thing in this entire divorce settlement. But if I had dug my heels in and said, yeah. no, I'm right, you know, my perspective is the only right one, then I would still, I mean, yeah, I would still be fighting. I would still, this, who knows how much longer this could all drag out, but because I was just like, okay, fine, you're right. Now it's all over. Almost. Yeah.
Actually, the practical yeah. reality is even if you violate it,
right.
he's not going to be, you know, it's so expensive to go back to court every, you know, for a stinking violation.
Yeah.
Got it. Michael's legal advice is just go ahead and violate it.
Did I say
my
that?
In New York,
did I say
I'm just
that?
My
$1,000 an hour New York lawyer.
I would say
I will make it clear that was me putting words in Michael's mouth.
If you're inspired,
thank you. My malpractice carrier is happier. Yeah. Now.
If you're inspired to drink, it couldn't possibly go wrong.
Right.
Okay. Or in the words of Sheryl Crow, if it makes you happy, it can't be that bad.
I love that song.
Yes, so do I. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Source takes care of all things, big and small. If you would simply ease into the flow of life, you would be swept into a current of well-being. But you resist, thinking you know how to get things done better than Source. You believe that Source does not know the details. However, this is a false premise. The details of you are contained in your vibration. Your vibration is emitted out into the universe. It is easily seen. Source is very aware of you. Source's capacity for awareness is infinite. You cannot comprehend how it all works, yet this awareness and response is woven into the very fabric of your universe. Keep going.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. This is how the flow of life works. That's one of the chapters in The Perception of Reality, is going with the flow of life. So easing resistance on all things, you get swept up in this river of well-being.
Wasn't that a Billy Joel song? Oh, the river of life. Okay. Imagine that Source is like gravity. Gravity is aware of you. Gravity knows when you throw a ball in the air or get on an airplane. Gravity never forgets about you, my aside, although sometimes we wish it would, and neither does Source. If you were to drop a paperclip or an elephant, gravity would respond to you personally, and so will Source.
Yep. So, Kate was asking, is Source taking care of the big things, but is Source taking care of me?
Mm. Yep.
So, like right. gravity, gravity is always with you.
Right. Okay. Unless we go into a vacuum, but that's another story.
No.
Everything might.
Gravity still acts on you in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Oh, does it? Oh, even in a vacuum. Oh, yeah. So even that's right. Even in outer space, it's mm-hmm. there. It's just not working.
Right. Well, it's there. It's just that you're out of range of the
gravitational pull.
The normal gravity that you're used to, but it's still there. Yeah.
Right. Of the larger body.
Yeah, we just saw The Martian last night, so that's how I know.
Okay. We all learn our science through the popular media.
That was a very scientific movie and book, by the way.
The book was, yeah.
It was every aspect of that book was sort of – it was written in this open format where he was getting feedback from scientists every step of the way. What would happen if this happens? How could he survive that? You know, and so everything was really – the research on that was as close as it could possibly be.
Wow.
You know, like, did you see the movie? Oh, I don't want to
give it away. No, I haven't.
Anyway, it's a great movie.
Yeah, don't give it away.
Okay. I like the book better, though, didn't you?
Well, the book goes into so much more detail, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Everything might collapse if you would stop and wait for inspiration. Maybe collapse is the best way to get you what you really want. Maybe it would not collapse. Maybe you would be inspired to reach for a book or even reach for some motivation. Maybe Source knows that for you to get what it is that you want, you must begin to recognize and embrace your own worthiness. You must trust the mechanism that brings all things. Joshua.
I just got chills at that last paragraph because this is also, this is Kate's 170th question or 60th question, something like that.
Wow.
And that last paragraph sums up everything for Kate. Which is, but you think, right, if I'm not going to sit here and do nothing until I get inspiration, that the whole world's going to fall around me. It just does not work that way. It's not possible. It's bringing you to where you want to go. You will get the inspiration. It will come if you're feeling good. But what happens is if you're not doing something, we're such doers, you sort of feel guilty for not doing anything. And so you make yourself do these things that mean nothing. And I can see this in other people now too, that they're just doing the stuff just to be busy. And it's not achieving anything. It's just busy work that's not doing a thing.
Like the hamster wheel that Joshua was talking about in the live call.
Yeah, just spinning around, spinning, going nowhere. Just doing stuff, going nowhere.
I was listening to my latest Abraham, and a woman came up to the hot seat and said that she had won the lottery, and she felt she had done a lot. She owed it to all the nap work she had done prior.
Yeah. Excellent.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all guilty of doing things that – you know, we don't need to do. So now I'm just focused now on what do I want to do now? What do I want, like Bashar, just focused on your highest excitement. Just do the most exciting thing you can do in this moment, whatever it is. And just, but even if it's nothing, watching TV or something, you will get inspiration to act as long as there's something that you want.
You know, last night, late at night, my wife was up. And she wanted to watch some TV, so it was like at 1:30 in the morning she found Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And my wife and I were playing against the contestants, and at the end they had the website to go and sign up to try to get on. And I'm going to do that today.
About 10 years ago, when it was big, I was inspired to go on, and I was accepted. And so Lily and I...
Oh, you passed the test.
Online, I guess, yeah. So now, so we flew to New York. We stayed in the most incredible hill. I think it's called the Hudson, right? Is it that? It's somewhere in Midtown on the west side. I think it's the Hudson. It has this huge open air lobby and then bar area behind it. It's a fantastic place. Anyways, we stayed there and had this great weekend. And I go in. And it was pop culture week, and I didn't know much about pop culture, obviously. And so I didn't. But we ended up going to these great restaurants. We're sitting at a bar waiting for this table. It was like an hour and a half wait. And the guy next to us goes, "Hey, you guys want to eat with me?" He goes, "No. They're just about to call me now, and I'm by myself. I'm on business." So we eat with him. He has an expense account, so he pays for it.
Ooh.
And as everything happened, we went to David Letterman. In that, going to David Letterman, they separate people. And they put the fun, energetic, good-looking people up front, and everyone else is behind.
And you were Bond because you're way in the back?
No.
He was the fun-loving.
I know. I was kidding.
They were looking at her, and I was just baggage with her.
Well, years ago, I took the test for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I actually went and did it. Mm-hmm. And because I'm a trivia nut.
Me too.
Yeah, I could see you begin with that.
Right, especially pop culture, especially government and history.
Yeah.
And I failed the test. And the reason I failed the test was because they asked a lot of questions about one subject that I'm incredibly weak on, food.
Mm.
Hmm.
If I was in that test, I would have won because I'm super strong on food. And I'm really weak on, what Britney Spears' last song was.
You guys would make a great team then.
We would. We'd be a good tag team.
Yeah. Right. But on sport, I answered all the sports questions. They had questions about the Supreme Court. I still remember they asked about the Supreme Court. They asked about government. They asked about which president was in power, blah, 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 blah. Those are gimmies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this time be inspired and then come from this feeling good place and realize that the answers to the questions are out there. All you have to do is be aligned to them, so you can
and channel your inner foodie.
My inner foodie.
Yeah.
Whoever you need, right? So this food question, just channel
Julia Child.
Julia Child.
There you go.
Well, wait, Gary, you could just channel Joshua, and you'd have infinite intelligence at your back, right there.
Yeah,
really.
I would.
I don't know. They might fuck him over like they did with the lottery numbers.
I know.
Ooh.
Did you hear that story? The lottery. So I'm like, let's see if we can get the lottery numbers. And so they gave me all these numbers. And I think the lottery starts at 60. So I got 73 and 87. And those aren't even in there. And then, hey, we didn't say this is going to be easy. We need to practice too. You can do whatever you want, but you're going to have to line up with it. And so are we. Yeah.
That's great.
So anyway, how's our time doing?
We're at 58 minutes.
Okay. Perfect time to wrap this fun mm-hmm. little show up. By the way, this is the best show in the universe of all the podcasts that there are.
That is
this
true.
Is the best show.
Absolutely.
So if you have any friends, send them this show because it is so much fun. This is probably a good way to get introduced into Law of Attraction and things like this is this show because, we're just trying to figure it out ourselves as well. And we're normal people.
This was my introduction, listening to you guys.
That's how you found out about us.
Yeah.
Look who you are now.
Yeah,
you,
right?
Too, may be listening to the show and one day be on the show with us.
Yeah.
This is Roundtable that is infinitely large, so we could have
that's right.
as many people as Skype will allow us to be in one place. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for being here. We had a great time. Have a wonderful week. Enjoy your weekend, whatever you're doing. You're probably getting this on Tuesday if you're listening to this. So enjoy the rest of your week and visit the teachings of Joshua. Ask a question. Read other people's questions. Read all the quotes. Have fun. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
And mention we're on Apple and Stitcher.
We're on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah.
And Podbean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Have a great week, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Teachings of Joshua Roundtable. Remember, you are loved more than you can imagine, by more than you could ever count. We'll see you next week.